Welcome back. You're on 770 CHQR. In More Than Money, you're here with Dave and Faisal. We've got Peter Zion with us today, geopolitical expert. It's been a couple of months since we talked to Peter. And guess what? There's a few things that have changed recently.
Just a little thing called an election.
Yeah. And then, of course, we've had some vaccination notifications here, early stages, and we've got worse numbers with COVID. What does all this mean, man?
Yeah. It's an interesting time when it comes to the geopolitical piece. Mm-hmm. Because now I think there's going to be bigger fights happening, but I want to get and fights between countries. Because if you've got a limited number of vaccine opportunities, who gets what and stuff like that? Let's have that kind of conversation with Peter. I think it's going to be very interesting. Peter, welcome to the show.
Good to be back.
All right, it's been a little while since we last chatted. Let's just talk maybe about the election so far. I'd love to get your opinion on if this thing ever gets settled. And it is a Biden administration. What does that mean? What's it going to mean globally?
Well, let me give you, for the election, the bad news and the good news. The bad news is that the legal challenges are continuing, although probably resolved this week. The last case that matters is going to be heard in Pennsylvania. And it's probably going to be thrown out due to lack of evidence. So I don't know if that's going to mean that Trump is going to concede, but it does mean that this is pretty much locked in. Now, for the first 6 months of the Biden administration, he's going to be dealing with political issues related to coronavirus. I do have some hope that this is going to get off on the right foot. Everybody agrees that there needs to be another coronavirus package, bailout package, stimulus package, whatever you want to call it. And so we actually do have a topic for cooperation right off the bat. And perhaps the best news is if you look down into the demographic data, even in Wyoming, where like half of the population are still working cowboys, and even in Vermont, where half the population thinks that Bernie Sanders is just too conservative, one third of the voter base voted for the other guy. So Americans love to scream at one another, but the country is not nearly as divided as it appears. I mean, we're not dealing with anything like the election splits that Canada regularly sees between Alberta and the core, between Quebec and Toronto. This is just what it's like to be in the United States, and social media has given everyone a bullhorn.
Right.
All right. So let's talk about now the vaccines. We've been hearing three or four different companies coming out saying we're ready. We want to get emergency approval. Here's my question or concern about this. There is what, 7 billion plus people in the world? Mm-hmm. Let's say the wealthiest are in the U.S., maybe China, and in Europe. Who gets the vaccine? How do they figure out how much volume they can push out to the public? How does that work? Like, and from a geopolitical perspective, if Europe gets more of their population covered than, let's say, the U.S. does, is this going to be a big fight happening between these nations? Or, like, how do you see this panning out?
It really depends upon what the winning vaccine is, and that'll determine just how hot the political debate is going to be. So, for example, Pfizer says they're going to apply tomorrow. The downside of their vaccine, well, there's two downsides. Number one, it takes two shots, not one, so you need twice as many shots. And second, it needs to be stored at ultra-cold conditions, something like negative 100 centigrade. So we just don't have a cold chain for distributing that. And if that is the only vaccine that we have, the United States won't be able to start mass vaccination until the second half of next year. And in that sort of environment, when distribution is the issue, not production, it's really hard to have an argument because it's not like there's a lot. It's obvious that one country isn't going to get it all because there isn't much to have. However, if the Johnson & Johnson formula proves to be available in a similar time frame, it just needs normal refrigeration, and it's a once and done. Then it's a manufacturing issue. And then we can talk about having an argument between America and Europe and the rest of the world over who gets quick. But keep in mind that this is a transitory issue, because if we do have the J&J one win, we're going to be producing more than 1 billion cases next year, and probably 5 billion the following year. So the issue of getting who gets it first is a matter of 3 to 6 months, not 1 to 2, 3 years like it would be with something that requires more of a cold chain. Also, keep in mind, if we do get the Pfizer one, and if that is the only one, you're talking about not getting global coverage for 6 or 7 years, if at all, because there's large parts of the world where ultra-cold chain distribution simply isn't an option.
Right. Yeah. And I would expect over the coming, next few months, you're going to hear about other big trials, and there's a ton on the go. If, in fact, we end up
Absolutely.
With a number of vaccinations that do work, is the manufacturing, let's assume it's all most going to be done at, regular refrigerated temperatures, is the manufacturing capacity in pharmaceuticals large enough to accept more than two or three? Or like, what's the limit here in terms of manufacturing capacity if you got multiple winners?
This is actually probably the best news. There's manufacturing capacities for vaccines in multiple countries, China, Europe, Canada, the United States. Mm-hmm. And each of the candidates that is currently in phase three testing, they have all, every single one of them has started production as yep. if they were going to be the only one. So there's definitely stresses in the system, and definitely that is pushing prices up. But with the amount of monetary and fiscal firepower that governments have thrown at this, it's almost a rounding error. Right. So what you identified is actually the most likely outcome, that we will have multiple vaccines, some of which will be available in the same country, some of which are exclusive to this or that place. But we should be able to accelerate vaccination. Now, these won't be equivalent. And after the first year, they are going to tweak all their formulas, and some of them are probably going to merge efforts and will come out with better vaccines.
Right.
But I've got to say, the initial results that we've gotten from Moderna and Pfizer are very positive.
Yeah.
Remember, these are the ones that were using that new mRNA strategy that mm-hmm. has never really been done before. And so far, it's going beautifully.
Well, we'll keep our fingers crossed.
Let me ask this question. You're now in charge of a country. You know that there's a certain demographic that's impacted with COVID from a life expectancy perspective. The elderly get hit hard with this stuff.
Yeah.
Do we put the vaccines and give it all to them first, or do because there's a higher percentage of population now that's impacted by this than there is in the general population? Like, what my question really is do you give it to all your seniors first? Let them have that first round and then give it to the rest of the population, because there's going to be a lot of fighting about that, because I can just see the issues coming from there, right? What are your thoughts, Peter?
If you had enough doses off the bat to saturate that population, I would say absolutely that's where you would start. But we don't. We have to ramp up, and so we have to be a lot more selective. And so first load go to first responders. Second wave goes to the substrate that helps the medical facilities, whether you're in accounting or driving a truck, anyone associated with healthcare is in the second round.
Yeah.
And then third round, you start going for the more endangered populations. The problem is if you do an insufficient inoculation of the endangered populations first, but don't help out your healthcare workers, you're actually probably going to cause more deaths.
Yeah.
Because you'll have people in that population assume that enough of that population has been inoculated that they mm-hmm. can act normally, and you'll probably actually see a surge of people into the ER, which would just make things worse.
How does this whole thing impact Canada?
You guys have a couple of interesting things going on. Some of the integration issues with NAFTA and NAFTA 2 between Canada and the United States are kind of on hold right now, and that's everything from health insurance to public transportation to being able to drive over the border in order to get medical assistance. Canada has been fairly aggressive at cutting deals with multiple drug producers so that whichever one comes out first, Canada gets a cut of. And since it looks like we're probably going to have two, three, maybe even four coming out at more at the same time, that would argue that all Canada has to worry about is an internal distribution issue,
mm-hmm.
Which is, for being in this situation, about as good as you can hope for. So I think the general superior level of health among Canadians has handed you guys a significant advantage over the United States to this point. You're just a healthier population. And your ability to deal with the immediate care as opposed to chronic care better than the United States also helps in this situation. The only danger I see is provincial.
Mm-hmm.
Healthcare, for the most part, is a provincial prerogative, and obviously the provinces all have their opinions about how this should be distributed. Now, this is something that all the provinces have been thinking about since the beginning. This is not going to catch you unawares. But jostling within Federation over who gets what first, because you have very different demographic structures in each province,
mm-hmm.
that is the only landmine I kind of see, and that is purely political.
And that's been our country's problems for everything. It's been provincial issues, not a national issue. We turn it into a national issue because it's province versus province, and that's going to be interesting to see.
Peter, we're going to have to leave it there.
As problems go, at least it's one you're familiar with.
Yeah, exactly right. We've dealt with it before. We have to leave it there, but as always, we appreciate your insights into this changing, dynamic, and really interesting world that we live in.
No worries. You guys take care.
Been joined by Peter Zine, who's a geopolitical expert. And speaking of geopolitics, you know, we have the entire world that we can invest in. We can invest people's money in to get exposure to whatever asset class and whatever country that you want. And that represents a really unique opportunity on how you can both profit and protect through crazy markets. And we're going to talk about some of that at our upcoming seminar.
Yeah, that'll be on Tuesday, December 8th, 7 p.m. live online. Go to morethanmoneyradio.com to register.
Stick around after the break if you want to learn how to save on your taxes this year here on 770 CHQR and More Than Money.